Chapter 2. Warship Lacrimae, Trans-Plutonian Region. The ships came from the night in a ragged cloud. They were the skeletons and carcasses of warships, their flanks gouged by asteroid impacts, haloed by leaking atmosphere. From Pluto's orbit, the fires of their engines appeared one at a time. On the bridge of the Lacrimae, Sigismund watched the picked feed of the approaching fleet and looked at Boreas.
"Signal the fleets into position," said Sigismund.
Boreas nodded at the data hanging in curtains of hololight above the command platform.
"It is a large formation," said Boreas.
The Templar champion's pale face was set, the features hardened around his eyes.
50 vessels at least. Warships too. Damaged but still active. We are reading power in the weapons, but it is difficult to get a clear reading. There is a lot of moving debris out there at the moment."
Sigismund shrugged, conceding the point. The solar system was never entirely empty. Shoals of broken rock and ice tumbled through the void on millennia-old journeys. Added to which, Pluto dragged belts of refuse with it as it circled Sol. Husks of ships and stations that had been dead for hundreds or even thousands of years.
"They could be survivors from a storm," said Sigismund.
"Or another attack fleet," said Boreas.
"Indeed so,"
said Sigismund, without moving his gaze from the picked feed. This latest vomiting from the warp was bearing down on Pluto. Between the outer planet and the abyss spun its moons, Charon, Styx, Nix, Kerberos, and Hydra. The smaller moons were little larger than the biggest warships. Warrens of tunnels and bunkers cut through their rock and ice. Hydra sat furthest from Pluto. While her sibling moons were fortresses, she was little more than a shell around a core of reactors. Those reactors powered equally vast signal and sensor arrays. From Hydra, the watchers on the solar system's outer sphere could see far and coordinate the firing and signaling of all the rest. Of those others, Kerberos stood apart in another way. Clad in steel and weapons, she watched over the void with enough firepower to break a battle fleet. The name Kerberos was an echo of a tale which told of a three-headed hound that stood at the gates of death. Sigismund could not think of a more appropriate title. Together, Pluto and its moons were a fortress on the edge of the abyss. One day, the last battle of the Imperium would begin, and on that day, Pluto would be the first wall against which the attackers broke.
"Do you ever wonder why they come?" Boreas grunted. "Is it spite, or strategy, or insanity?"
"It does not matter why, only that they do," said Sigismund.
"This is no longer a war of hope. This is a war of vengeance and obliteration," murmured Boreas.
Sigismund glanced at the other warrior.
"Strange words, not your own. Where did you hear them?"
"From a lost friend,"
said Boreas, but added nothing more. Sigismund turned away. Something had changed in Boreas in the time since the war had begun.
"Have I changed as much?" wondered Sigismund. "What will we be by the time we must fight for the last time?"
"What is the battle order?" asked Boreas.
"Move us to within gun reach. Broadcast orders for them to cut their engines and make their weapons cold. Prepare targeting to hit their engines on my command, and only on my command. If they are hostile, Inwit and Sol battle groups strike the middle and cross. Fire to cripple, and then we board them."
"How many ships do you wish to hold back on the line?"
"Acre battle group. The guns of the moons can handle anything that gets through. Take the engines. If they try to push through deeper in system, then execute them." He paused. "If they are hostile..."
"My lords!"
The shout came from the communication pit to the side of the platform. Sigismund looked in the direction of the voice and saw one of the astropathic relay officers rising from his seat. The man's face was pale above his black and yellow uniform.
"Speak,"
commanded Sigismund.
"The choir has received word from the third sphere,"
said one of the other officers.
"An attack is in progress."
Another officer began to speak, hands pressed against the vox connection bonded to her ears.
"The forces of the fourth sphere are reporting. Lord Sigismund!"
A voice cut through the others. It was the voice of Anassis, the senior amongst the communications officers and the one directly linked to the astropath Prime on the Hydra Moon Fortress. If she asked for his attention, it took priority, even over the dire news coming from within the solar system. The other communications officers fell silent as she looked up.
"Fire on the mountains," she said.
Sigismund blinked once, not needing to question what she had said or doubt its meaning. Within his mind, he saw an old memory of events that had not yet happened. The walls of the Imperial Palace falling in fire, a sky of iron, the dead covering the ground. It had come, at last, as it was always going to. He looked up at the picked feed of the ragged swarm of ships closing from the void, and as he looked, the first of them fired. Alarms cut through the air, shouts rose from the Auspex pits. "All ships engage," called Sigismund. "Maximum force!" Boreas was shouting orders a second later. The Lacrimae shook as it came to full life. Sigismund pulled his helm from his waist and clamped it over his head. The war was here. The enemy was come at last, and he would be the first to face them. Docking Gantry Gamma 19, Hydra Moon Fortress, Plutonian Orbit. The docking collar clanged as it locked into place. Miss Madra glanced at her shul, but he had lowered the visor of his void armor. Around them, the auxiliaries stood, faceless, behind masks of brushed plastile. Between them, the caskets of the two dead astropaths sat on a tracked trolley. Her Volkite charger felt heavy in her hands, its weight familiar in a way that brought old memories to mind. Her pistols were hidden in a pouch at the small of her back. She shifted her weight. Air began to hiss around the door hatch. Strategus Morhan nodded to her, his exposed face as blank as the masks his subordinates wore.
"Alpha to Omega," he said,
and the words startled her. She blinked.
"Omega to Alpha," she replied.
Lights in the docking bridge pulsed. Ashul was a still presence at her shoulder, his finger tapping the casing of his gun. Tap, tap. Tap, tap. She drew and held a breath. Calm. Focused. The next steps clear in her mind. She could hear the track units humming beneath the casket. A line of blue light arced around the hatch in front of them as it opened. Warm air billowed in and became mist. She felt her muscles begin to tense in sequence. Figures stood in the grey air beyond the hatch. Armour plates bulked the figures' shoulders. Weapons hung from their hands, pipes and weapon feeds stretching to their backs. Light glinted off gloss crimson and white carapace. Inferalti hussars, she thought, as her eyes filtered through them. One of the old hundred. Elites. 20. Heavy weapons, loaded and ready, fingers on triggers. Could have been worse. It could have been the Imperial fists. Tap, tap. Tap, tap. She forced stillness into her muscles.
"Your orders?"
A voice came from the ranks of the hussars, the words a growl of speaker static.
"We are the escort for the astropaths from the throne world. They died en route. We are here to give the bodies to the astropath enclave."
"What would they want with corpses?" asked the hussar.
Morhan gave a shrug that somehow managed to convey that he thought answering was as beneath him as the questioner.
"That's their matter."
A pause. Morhan gave another shrug, arrogance and disdain rippling through him.
"If you wish to eject the body of an esteemed member of the Telepathica into the void, I am sure it will end well for you in the long run."
A pause hung in the pulsing of the lights.
"Clearance,"
asked the hussar.
"You have it already, or we wouldn't be here. Now either move aside and offer us escort or start shooting. There are what, 20 of you red and whites? You might even stand a chance."
Tap, tap. Tap, tap. Miss Madra clenched her teeth. The sound of Ashul's finger on his gun was like a drum in her ear.
"You may pass within," said the voice.
The hussars parted, stepping in sync to form a corridor between their guns. Morhan executed a perfect salute. Miss Madra and the rest of the squad came to attention. For an instant, she felt like she had stepped sideways into the life she had left behind. Then they were marching forwards, the astropath's caskets rolling between them. They had gone 200 paces when sirens began to wail. Amber lights blinked, and the deck began to ring with the sound of running feet. Another squad of Inferalati hussars ran towards them. Miss Madra tensed, Ashul's finger stilled on the trigger of his gun. Then the hussars were running past them. Morhan turned and called out to the squad sergeant.
"What's the alert?" "Fire on the mountain, sir,"
called the sergeant without stopping.
"The invasion has come."
Then the hussars were gone, but the sirens and lights beat on.
"Double time,"
called Morhan, and the auxiliaries began to pound down the corridor, the caskets rocking on their track units. Imperial Fist's frigate Unbreakable Truth, Trans-Neptunian region.
"Come on, come on,"
muttered Andromeda. Arcamus ignored her. His eyes were on the pick screens, watching the feed of information from the frigate's AuSpec systems. They had been following the projected path of the scavenger ship for 10 hours. So far, they had seen no sign of it.
"Doesn't this thing go any faster?"
she hissed, stamping a foot on the deck.
"We are degrading the plasma reactors with our speed,"
growled Kestros.
"No, then,"
she said.
"Quiet,"
said Arcamus. His eyes focused on the screens, where amber runes had begun to spin, where before there had been only blue.
"There it is. Cheo, what is that?"
"Lord Arcamus,"
answered Majos Cheo from the column that loomed above the command deck.
"We are detecting the engine output of a ship. It is consistent with the craft we are pursuing. It is losing speed."
"Why?"
asked Arcamus.
"Its engine output is fluctuating. 60% probability of engine or reactor damage. Of this, we are in concordant certainty."
"Good."
"Our weapons and engines are prepared. What outcome should we facilitate into being?"
Arcamus felt his face twitch. Unlike some warships, the Unbreakable Truth was a gift of the Machine Cult to the Seventh Legion, and crewed almost entirely by tech priests, servitors, and mechanicum helots. On other ships, officers of different stations would have answered Arcamus's commands, but on the Unbreakable Truth, Cheo alone was the voice of the ship and its crew. It was efficient, but also meant that the Majos referred to both himself and every other part of the ship in the personal plural. It had taken a while for Arcamus to not find it disconcerting.
"Maintain intercept course," he said. "Runner down."
He glanced at Kestros.
"Boarding assault. Everything within dies. I want visual confirmation that the Alpha Legion are on board. Andromeda, get the prisoner. He comes with us and gives us confirmation of the presence of our target."
"You trust the Psycho?"
asked Andromeda.
"I trust him not at all, but I will take whatever advantage we can."
"And if he is aboard?"
"We withdraw by snap teleportation and then blast the ship to atoms."
"By your will,"
Kestros saluted.
"Lord Arcamus,"
came Cheo's voice.
"Their primary engines have failed. They are firing secondary thrusters to try and turn. We are closing."
"Why would they turn?"
asked Andromeda.
"Evasion,"
said Arcamus, pointing at the tactical readouts.
"There is a dust drift they could reach and try to hide in."
He shot a look at Andromeda and Kestros.
"Get to the launch decks."
They moved to comply, as a notion cut into his thoughts.
"Wait,"
he said, looking back to the data on the screens. Kestros and Andromeda froze.
"How long ago did their engines begin to fail?"
he called to the tech priest.
"Just before we made the detection. The engine fluctuations are the reason we saw them."
"All weapons locked to target,"
said Arcamus.
"Master?"
asked Kestros, but Arcamus nodded to the tech priest.
"Fire!"
"Compliance,"
said the tech priest, and a heartbeat later the ship shook and shook again. Macro cannons, plasma annihilators, and turbo lasers hurled their fury across the dark between the Unbreakable Truth and its quarry. The beams of laslite struck first and carved into the scavenger's hull. The macro shells and plasma streams hit an instant later and split it open in a burst of light.
"What?"
began Andromeda, but Arcamus was already calling to Cheo.
"What craft are logged as passing through this volume in the last 9 hours?
"Compiling and assessing,"
replied Cheo. Arcamus turned to look at Kestros and Andromeda.
"We should not have been able to catch them. That scavenger craft was faster than this ship." "Its engines,"
began Kestros,
"failed and revealed its location. It should have been far beyond this point already, but instead it's here. Why would it have lost time on us?"
Andromeda cursed.
"We've then stopped or slowed to meet with another craft,"
said Kestros.
The monitor craft Implacable, bearing 2 astropaths to the outer system defenses, with a contingent of the 56th Velitaris Tertio of the 2nd Solar Auxiliar Cohort, passed through the zone of potential convergence with the recently destroyed vessel. Projected time of potential meeting between the vessels between 2 and 5 hours prior to present. Accuracy of projection is 69%.
If we had boarded, then they could have detonated reactors and removed us in an instant,
breathed Kestros. Arcamus nodded.
Then who would think to track the position of an authorized monitor craft?
Where was this ship?
Asked Andromeda.
You are referring to the system monitor designated Implacable,
said Cheo.
Yes, yes,
snapped Andromeda.
Where was it taking these astropaths? To the communication fortress in the first sphere,
said Cheo.
To the plutonian moon designated Hydra.
Arcamus felt a shiver pass through his bionics. Andromeda's face was fixed in a grin, as though at a joke she had just understood. Kestros met his gaze and completed Arcamus's thought.
They were never fleeing Terra, he said. They were moving towards their strike point. Get us to Hydra, said Arcamus. Burn the reactors to slag if you have to, but get us there.
Astropath Sanctuary, Hydra Moon Fortress Plutonian Orbit. They reached the outer doors of the sanctuary as the sirens rose in pitch. The alert lights began to blink red. Active battle footing, thought Ms. Medra, as they halted before the door. 4 Infralati hussars stood either side of the entrance. Her eyes flicked over their weapons. 2 with drum-fitted shot cannons, 2 with rotor cannons, ammo feeds looping to their knees from hoppers on their backs. Augmetic bracing struts ran over their shoulders and torsos, as though they were being hugged by metal spiders. Morhan stepped forwards.
Sanctuary is on lockdown,
said one of the hussars, a male from the voice.
No, snapped Morhan. These are 2 of their dead, and you are either going to call one of them out here to take charge of these remains, or I am going to dump them out of an airlock and explain that it was you who suggested we do so, because you were more worried about a lockdown drill than respecting the custom of the Telepathica.
It's not a drill,
the hussar said, and raised the barrel of his shot cannon. The other 3 all did the same.
Back away!
The hussar released the firing catch on the cannon with a deliberate flick of his thumb. Ms. Madras swallowed hard, and the sub-vocal mic pressed against her throat activated. Static popped in her vox speed.
Stand by,
she said. She had a throwing blade pressed between her palm and the foregrip of her gun. A quiet and swift way to kill, and the last thing that the hussars would expect.
Back away, repeated the hussar.
Morhan nodded and stepped back, shaking his head slightly as though at manifest stupidity. Ms. Madra drew breath to speak the kill command. A metallic clank pealed out through the air. The doors to the sanctuary were opening. Piston bolts disengaged one after another, the layers of plasteel pulling back into the walls. The hussars twitched in surprise, but kept their weapons leveled. Ms. Madra held the breath she had drawn. The last leaf of armor parted, and a figure stepped out, flanked by 2 masked soldiers in coal-coloured armour. Black sentinels, she thought, the life wards of the astropaths within the solar system. Between them hobbled an astropath wrapped in green velvet and ermine. He carried a silver cane in each hand, and his face was so thin and pale that it seemed like a skull with the skin still clinging to the bone. The astropath stopped and looked up at the corner of the corridor, and Ms. Madra saw that the sockets of his eyes had been filled with clusters of rubies. Red light glittered from the jewels as he turned his head from side to side, as though trying to hear something. His tongue flicked to the edge of his lips and then back.
They said that you have come bearing the body of 2 of our number,
said the astropath.
Honored one, said the hussar. A full lockdown and confinement is in place.
Shut up!
The psyker snapped, and banged one of his canes on the floor. The hussar hesitated and then fell silent. The astropath turned his blind gaze back to the twin caskets spawned between the 2 lines of auxiliaries.
Is this them?
He asked, but stepped forwards without waiting for an answer. He took both canes in one hand and placed the other on the polished metal of a casket.
You stupid idiots,
he whispered. Close enough for Ms. Madra to hear. For an instant she thought he was talking to her, or the hussars,
But she saw his fingers tremble on the casket top and realized that he was talking to the corpse within.
Why did you not stay in the City of Sight? This is a time of war. And...
He looked up, and she felt his blind gaze fall on her for a second. It was like a breath of freezing air. She felt a shiver of sympathetic anguish run through her. So the dead astropaths had been people that this other one had cared for. She wondered for a second if that had been deliberate. Another little detail put in place by the Legion to use if needed.
How did...
began the astropath, straightening.
How did they die?
In their sleep, replied Morhan. It was sudden. We don't know more, I'm afraid. The old astropath looked at him.
In their sleep?
He asked. And Miss Madra felt another shiver of cold on her skin. Beside her, Ashul had begun tapping his finger on the case of his gun again. Tap, tap. Tap, tap. Yes, said Morhan.
You are lying,
said the astropath simply. Miss Madra threw her knife in the space that it took Morhan to blink. It hit the nearest hussar in the neck, just below the bottom of his visor. He staggered. Ashul fired from behind her. A line of laslight hit one of the black sentinels in the head. The soldier fell, and Ashul raked into the other coal-armored figure. Miss Madra swung her Volkite around and fired it point-blank through the face of the astropath. Vaporized skull and flesh exploded around the path of the beam. The man's body was reduced to ash. The beam lanced on into the hussar behind. Fragments of armor, bone, and exo-rig ripped out, hitting the other hussar as burning shrapnel. One black sentinel and one hussar remained between the auxiliaries and the open door of the sanctuary.
Through the door!
Shouted Morhan. The black sentinel was fast and was already running back towards the opening. The surviving hussar braced and fired his shot cannon. Clouds of pellets exploded through the auxiliaries, ringing off armor and ripping through blast fabric. Two went down. The cannon roared as it swallowed shells. Morhan leapt at the hussar, sword pulling free of its scabbard, and sawed the blade up under the soldier's chin. Gloss blood sheeted down the white and red plates of armor. Miss Madra dropped to one knee, aiming her charger at the black sentinel. He was ducking and weaving without rhythm or pattern. Good training, she thought. Very good. Three strides separated him from the open doors. She breathed out and pulled the trigger. The beam hit the running man in the small of the back and exploded through his torso. Miss Madra was up and running before the corpse hit the floor. The auxiliaries were sprinting next to her, now lugging the metal bulk of the two caskets. They cleared the doorway. Morhan was already at the door controls. The layers of plasteel began to slam shut. The auxiliaries were spreading out, covering the archways leading off the entrance chamber. They had left two wounded outside. There was no helping that. Neither time nor circumstance was on their side. It was suddenly quiet. The blare of alarms and flash of warning lights shut out as the blast doors sealed. Ashul was already snapping the seals around the lid of one of the caskets.
Atmospheric protocols in force, she called over the vox. Make sure your masks are sealed.
The lid came off the casket. Beneath it lay the corpse of a man. Dark veins marbled the pale skin of his face, and the green silk of his robes lay over his limbs. Pale mist coiled from inside as the coolant gases within met the warmer air of the chamber. Ashul reached in and yanked the corpse out onto the floor. Four quick movements, and two metal panels snapped free from the bottom of the casket. Beneath them, a dozen cylinders of brushed steel nestled in neat lines. Ashul began pulling out the cylinders, throwing them to Morhan and the auxiliaries. Miss Madra caught one. It was heavy and cold, even through the padding of her gloves. She found the release trigger.
Stand by to arm and disperse on my order,
she said into the vox. The black sentinels fired without warning. She'd not even seen them approach. Lasfire snapped through the air. An auxiliary went down, a hole burned through his faceplate. Another was punched backwards off his feet. Miss Madra was moving and firing before any of the rest, snaking from side to side as she pulsed the Volkite beam into the passage opening where the fire was coming from.
First section release,
she shouted.
Release now!
Silver cylinders flew over her head and crashed down into the passage openings. The hiss of releasing pressure cut through the sound of gunfire. A shot buzzed past her head from behind, so close it blurred her sight. She saw the splash of its impact, and a figure slumped from beside one of the entrances.
Nice shot,
she snarled. My pleasure, replied Ashul.
The auxiliaries were firing back. Morhan was shouting at the section forwards. A fresh squall of lasfire breathed towards her, and she jinked aside. Her blood was singing with reaction enhancers. Her augmented heart was beating out a machine gun rhythm. The Legion had given her many things, and taken much in return, but the full range of those gifts was something she rarely had the pleasure of using. The first passage opening was in front of her. A black sentinel crouched low in the lee of the arch. A carbine pointed dead at her. The face behind the sights was a lacquered mask of a grinning beast, its cheeks painted silver with swirled tears. The sentinel began to squeeze the trigger. She snapped to the side. The muzzle of the carbine wavered and then flared. Lasbolts spat past her as she kicked from the floor. The auxiliary armor she wore was bulky, made to weather damage rather than allow the wearer to dodge it. Not ideal, but still not a real hindrance. She struck the black sentinel in the chest with both feet. His chest plate cracked beneath the impact. He cannoned into the passage wall as she landed. He rebounded without a pause and brought his gun up to fire. Miss Madra landed and rammed the barrel of her gun into his painted mask. The lacquer split. The man within sucked a breath, struggling to bring his weapon up to fire. The gas that was flooding through the air flowed in through the crack in his mask and down into his lungs. He slumped to the floor, dead before the muscles of his legs had finished folding. The auxiliaries were storming into the passage openings. Miss Madra followed them, triggering the release of her canister. "Second section release!" she shouted, and threw the gas canister through an unsealed blast hatch. 5 minutes later, the gas had flooded the sanctuary. The 10 astropaths of the choir lay on the floor of their communion chamber, utterly still, their mouths open in the act of taking their last breath. Miss Madra checked the last of them, and then activated a new channel on her vox. "The blind are silent," she said. "Alpha to Omega,